Pam said, "Eric, if you hadn't been hungry, you would have questioned such an opportune arrival." "Yes," he agreed. "My mind isn't yet clear, but I see the sense of your words."
"Suki, what did you get from her thoughts?" Pam asked.
"She was earning money, but she was excited that she might die."
I shrugged.
"But she didn't."
"No, I got here in time to interrupt what would have been a fatal feeding. Right, Eric? Could you have stopped?"
He looked profoundly embarrassed.
"Maybe not. My control was almost gone. It was her smell. When she came up to me, she seemed so ordinary. Well, attractive because of the wereblood, but nothing really special. And I certainly didn't offer her money. Then suddenly..."
He shook his head and gulped.
"Why did her attraction suddenly increase?"
Pam was nothing if not pragmatic.
"Wait, I apologize. We don't have time to get lost in the whys and wherefores. We must get through this tonight, us three,"
she said, looking at me and Eric in turn. I nodded again. Eric gave a jerk of his head.
"Good," she said. "Suki, you got here just in time. She wasn't here by accident. She didn't smell and taste that way by accident. A lot of things happened here tonight that reek of a plot. My friend, I'm going to repeat myself. You have to put aside personal pain for tonight."
I gave Pam a very direct look. If I hadn't gone into the bedroom, Eric might have drained the woman, and the woman herself had considered that result. I had a hunch something had been set in motion to catch Eric red-handed, red-fanged, more appropriately. "Go brush your teeth," I told him. "Really scrub. Wash your face. Rinse out the sink with lots and lots of water." Eric didn't like being told what to do, but he understood expediency very well. He went into the bathroom, leaving the door open. Pam said, "Let me go check on what's happening with our special guests," and disappeared down the hall into the living room, where the low music had continued without a break. Eric stepped back into the bedroom, drying his face with a towel. He looked more alert, more present. He hesitated when he saw I was by myself. Eric was pretty much a stranger to relationship problems. From little clues and reminiscences he'd let drop, I'd gotten the picture that during literally centuries of sexual adventures, he'd called the shots and the women had said, "Whatever you want, you big handsome Viking." He'd had a fling or two with other vampires. Those had been more balanced connections, but brief. That was all I knew. Eric was not one to brag. He simply took sexual relationships for granted. I was already feeling calmer. That was all to the good, since I was alone in a room with a man I'd wanted to shoot a few minutes before. Though we weren't bonded anymore, Eric knew me well enough to realize that he could now speak.
"It was only blood," he said. "I was anxious and hungry. You were late, and I didn't want to just bite into you the moment I saw you. She came in while I was waiting, and I thought I'd have a quick drink. She smelled so intoxicating."
"So you were trying to spare me,"
I said, letting sarcasm drip off my words.
"I see."
Then I made myself shut up.
"I acted impulsively."
And his mouth compressed into a straight line. I considered him. I acted on impulse sometimes myself. For example, the few previous times I'd been this angry or this hurt, I'd walked out of the situation. Not because I'd wanted the last word or because I wanted to make a dramatic statement, but because I needed alone time to cool off. I took a deep breath. I looked Eric in the eye. I realized we both had to make a huge effort to move past this, at least for tonight. Without conscious thought, I had identified the subtle scent that must have screamed out at Eric's senses.
"She's already part wear, and she was doused in the scent of fairy blood to make you want her more," I said. "I believe you'd have had better sense if not for that. She was a trap. She came here because she expected to make a lot of money if you fed from her, and maybe to flirt with her death wish."
"Can you manage to carry on with the evening as if we were in harmony?" Eric asked.
"I'll do my best," I said, trying not to sound bitter.
"That's all I can ask."
"You don't seem to have any doubt that you can cope," I observed.
But then I closed my eyes for a moment, and I used every bit of my self-control to pull myself together into a coherent person. "So if I'm here to officially greet Felipe, and he's supposed to be talking to us about the disappearance of Victor,
When's all the whoopee out in the great room gonna stop? And just so you know, I'm seriously mad about the table.
Me too, he said with unmistakable relief. I'll tell Felipe that we must talk tonight, now.
He looked down at me.
My lover, don't let your pride get the better of you.
Well, me and my pride would be delighted to get back in my car and go home, I said, struggling to keep my voice quiet. But I guess me and my pride will make the effort to stay here and get through this evening, if you could get everyone to stop screwing around long enough to get down to business, or you can kiss me and my pride goodbye. With that, I went into the bathroom and shut the door, very quietly and deliberately. I locked it. I was through talking, at least for a while. I had to have a few seconds when no one was looking at me. From outside the door, there was silence. I sat down on the toilet lid. I felt so full of conflicting emotions that it was like walking through a minefield in my high-heeled black sandals with the silly flowers on them. I looked down at my bright toenails. Okay, I said to those toes. Okay. I took a deep breath. You knew he took blood from other people, and you knew other people might mean other women, and you knew that some women are younger and prettier and skinnier than you. If I kept repeating that, it would sink in. Good God, are knowing and seeing ever two different things? You also know, I continued, that he loves you, and you love him. When I don't want to yank off one of these heels and stick it. You love him, I repeated sternly. You've been through so much with him, and he's proved over and over that he'll go the extra mile for you. He had. He had. I told myself that about 20 times. So, I said in a very reasonable voice, here's a chance to rise above circumstances, to prove what you're made of, and to help save both our lives. And that's what I'll do, because Gran raised me right. But when this is over, I'll rip his damn head off. No, I won't, I admonished myself. We'll talk about it. Then I'll rip his head off. Maybe, I said, and I could feel myself smiling. Suki, Pam said from the other side of the door, I can hear you talking to yourself. Are you ready to do this thing? I am, I said sweetly. I stood, shook myself, and practiced a smile in the mirror. It was ghastly. I unlocked the door. I tried the smile out on Pam. Eric was standing right behind her, I guess thinking Pam would absorb the first blast if I came out shooting. Is Felipe ready to talk? I said. For the first time since I'd met her, Pam looked a little uneasy as she looked at me. Yes, she said. He is ready for our discussion. Great, let's get going. I maintained the smile. Eric eyed me cautiously, but didn't say anything. Good. The king and his aide are out here, Pam said. The others have moved the party into the room across the hall. Sure enough, I could hear squeals coming from behind the closed door. Felipe and the square-jawed vamp, the one I'd last seen drinking from a woman, were sitting together on the couch. Eric and I took the stained love seat arranged at right angles to the couch, and Pam took an armchair. The large, low coffee table, freshly gouged, that normally held only a few objets d'art, was cluttered with bottles of synthetic blood and glasses of mixed drinks, an ashtray, a cell phone, some crumpled napkins. Instead of its normally attractive and orderly formality, the living room looked more like it belonged in a low dive. I'd been conditioned for so many years that it was all I could do not to spring up, tie on an apron, and fetch a tray to clear away the clutter.
Sugi, I don't believe you've met Horst Friedman, Felipe said.
I yanked my eyes away from the mess to look at the visiting vampire. Horst had narrow eyes, and he was tall and angular. His short hair was a light brown and closely cut. He did not look as if he knew how to smile. His lips were pink and his eyes pale blue, so his coloring was oddly dainty, while his features were anything but.
Pleased to meet you, Horst, I said, making a huge effort to pronounce his name clearly.
Horst's nod was barely perceptible. After all, I was a human.
Eric, I have come to your territory to discuss the disappearance of Victor, my regent. Felipe said briskly. He was last seen in this city, if you can call Shreveport a city. I suspect that you had something to do with his disappearance. He was never seen after he left for a private party at your club.
So much for any elaborate story Eric had thought of spinning for Felipe.
I admit nothing, Eric said calmly.
Felipe looked mildly surprised.
But you don't deny the charge, either.
If I did kill him, Your Majesty, Eric said, as if he were admitting to swatting a mosquito, there would be not a trace of evidence against me. I regret that several of Victor's entourage also vanished when the regent did.
Not that Eric had given Victor and his cohorts any opportunity to surrender. The only one who'd been offered the chance to escape death was Victor's new bodyguard, Akiro, and he turned the offer down. The fight in Fangtasia had been a no-debate, full-frontal assault, involving gallons of blood and a lot of dismemberment and death. I tried not to remember it too vividly. I smiled and waited for Felipe's response.
Why did you do this? Are you not sworn to me?
For the first time, Felipe appeared less than casual. In fact, he looked downright stern.
I appointed Victor my regent here in Louisiana. I appointed him, and I am your king.
At the escalation in tone, I noticed Horst was tensed for action. So was Pam. There was a long silence. It was what I imagine is the definition of the word fraught.
Your Majesty, if I did this thing, it might have been for several reasons, Eric said, and I began to breathe again.
I am sworn to you, and I'm loyal to you, but I can't stand still while someone is trying to kill my people for no good reason and without previous discussion with me. Victor sent two of his best vampires to kill Pam and my wife.
Eric rested a cold hand on my shoulder, and I did my best to look shaken. That wasn't too hard.
Only because Pam is a great fighter, and my wife can hold her own, did they escape,
Eric said solemnly. It gave us all a moment to contemplate that. Horst was looking skeptical, but Felipe had only raised his dark eyebrows. Felipe nodded, bidding Eric to continue.
Though I don't admit to being guilty of his death, Victor was also attacking me, and therefore you, my king, economically. Victor put new clubs in my territory, but he kept the management, jobs, and revenue from these clubs exclusively for himself, which is against all precedent. I doubted he was passing along your share of the profits. I also believed he was trying to undercut me, to turn me from one of your best earners into an unnecessary hanger-on. I heard many rumors from the sheriffs in other areas, including some you brought in from Nevada, that Victor was neglecting all other business in Louisiana in this strange vendetta against me and mine.
I couldn't read anything in Felipe's face.
Why didn't you bring your complaints to me? The king said.
I did,
Eric said calmly.
I called your offices twice and talked to Horst, asking him to bring these issues to your attention.
Horst sat up a little straighter.
This is true, Felipe, as I— And why didn't you pass along Eric's concerns?
Felipe interrupted, turning his eyes on Horst. I anticipated watching Horst wriggle. Instead, Horst looked stunned. Maybe I'm just getting cynical from hanging around with vampires for so long, but I felt a near certainty that Horst had passed along Eric's complaints, but that Felipe had decided Eric would have to solve his issues with Victor in his own way. Now Felipe was throwing Horst under the bus without a qualm so he could maintain deniability.
Your Majesty, I said, we're awful sorry about Victor's disappearance, but maybe you haven't considered that Victor was a huge liability for you, too.
I gazed at him, sadly, regretfully. There was a moment of silence. All four vampires looked at me as if I'd offered them a bucket of pig guts. I did my best to look simple and sincere.
He was not my favorite vampire, Felipe said, after what seemed like about 5 hours. But he was very useful.
I'm sure you've noticed, I said, that in Victor's case, useful was a synonym for money pit. 'Cause I've heard from people who serve at Vic's Redneck Roadhouse, for example, that they were underpaid and overworked, so there's a big staff turnover. That's never good for business. And some of the vendors haven't been paid, and Vic's is behind with the distributor.
Duff had shared that with me 2 deliveries ago.
So, though Vic's started out great and pulled business from every bar around, they're not getting the repeat customers they need to sustain such a big place, and I know the revenue's fallen off.
I was only guessing, but I was accurate. I could tell by Horst's face.
Same thing for his vampire bar. Why pull customers away from the established vampire tourist spot, Fantasia? Dividing doesn't mean multiplying.
You're giving me a lesson in economics?
Felipe leaned forward, picked up one of the opened True Blood bottles, and drank from it, his eyes never leaving my face.
No, sir, I would never do such a thing. But I know what's happening on the local level because people talk to me, or I hear it in their heads. Of course, observing all this about Victor doesn't mean I know what happened to him.
I smiled at him gently. You lying sack of shit.
Eric, did you enjoy the young woman? When she came through this room, she said she'd been called to service you.
Felipe said, not taking his eyes off me.
I was surprised, since I was under the impression you were married to Miss Duckhouse. But the young woman seemed like a nice change of pace for you. She had such an interesting odor. If she hadn't been earmarked for you, I might have taken her for myself.
You would have been welcome to her, Eric said in a completely empty voice.
She told you she'd been called?
I was puzzled.
That's what she said,
Felipe said. His eyes were fixed on my face as though he were a hawk and I were a mouse he was considering for supper. On one level of my brain, I puzzled over this. I'd been delayed, the young woman had said she'd been called specifically for Eric, but on another level, I was busy regretting I'd saved Felipe's life when one of Sophie Ann's bodyguards had been well on the way to killing him. I regretted this intensely. Of course, I'd been saving Eric, too, and Felipe had been a byproduct, but still. Back to level one, and I realized that none of this was adding up. I smiled at Felipe more brightly.
Are you simple? Horst asked incredulously.
I'm simply sick of you,
I thought, not trusting myself to speak. Felipe said,
Horst, don't mistake Miss Stackhouse's cheerful looks for any mental deficiency.
Yes, Your Majesty.
Horst tried to look chastened, but he didn't quite make it. Felipe looked at him sharply.
I must remind you, unless I'm much mistaken, Miss Stackhouse took out either Bruno or Corinna. Even Pam couldn't have handled both of them at the same time.
I kept on smiling.
Which one was it, Miss Stackhouse?
There was another fraught silence. I wished we had background music. Anything would be better than this dead air. Pam stirred, looked at me almost apologetically.
Bruno,
Pam said.
Sookie killed Bruno while I took care of Corinna. How did you do that, Miss Stackhouse?
Felipe said. Even Horst looked interested and impressed, which was not a good thing.
It was kind of an accident.
You are too modest,
the king murmured skeptically.
Really, it was.
I remembered the driving rain and the cold, the cars parked on the shoulders of the interstate on a terrible, dark night.
I was sure pouring buckets that night,
I said quietly. Tumbling over and over down into the ditch running with chilly water, a desperate pawing to find the silver knife, sliding it into Bruno.
Was this the same kind of accident you had when you killed Lorena, or Siebert, or the werewoman?
Wow, how'd he know about Debbie? Or maybe he meant Sandra. And his list was by no means complete.
Yeah, that kind of accident.
Though I can hardly complain about Siebert, since he would have killed me very shortly,
Felipe observed, with an air of being absolutely fair.
Finally. I wondered if you remembered that part,
I muttered. I may have sounded a wee tad sardonic.
You did do me a great service,
he said.
I'm just trying to decide how much of a thorn you are in my side now.
Oh, come on.
I was really put out.
I haven't done anything to you that you couldn't have taken care of before it even happened.
Pam and Horst blinked, but I saw that Felipe understood me.
You maintain that if I had been more proactive, you would have been in no danger from Bruno and Corinna? That Victor would have stayed down in New Orleans where the regent should be, and that therefore Eric could have run Area 5 the way he has always run it?
He had it in a nutshell, as my grandmother would have said. But at least this time, I kept my mouth shut. Eric, by my side, was rigid as a statue. I'm not sure what would have happened next, but Bill appeared suddenly from the kitchen. He looked as excited as Bill ever looked.
"There's a dead girl on the front lawn," he said, "and the police are here."
A variety of reactions passed on Felipe's face in a few seconds.
"Then Eric, as the homeowner, must go out and talk to the good officers," he said. "We'll set things to rights in here. Eric, be sure to invite them in."
Eric was already on his feet. He called to Mustafa, who didn't appear. He and Pam exchanged a worried glance. Without looking at me, Eric reached back, and I stood to slide my hand into his. Time to close the ranks.
"Who is the dead woman?"
he asked Bill.
"A skinny brunette," he said. "A human?"
"Fang marks in her neck? Bright dress? Mostly green and pink?" I asked, my heart sinking.
"I didn't get that close," Bill said.
"How did the police find out there was a body?" Pam said. "Who called them?"
We moved toward the front door. Now I could hear the noise outside. With the drapes shut, we hadn't been able to see the flashing lights. Through the gap in the heavy fabric, I could see them.
"I never heard a scream or any other alarm," Bill said, "so I don't know why a neighbor would have called, but someone did." "You wouldn't have summoned the police yourself for any reason," Eric said, and there was the smell of danger in the room.
Bill looked surprised, which is to say his eyebrows twitched and he frowned.
"I can't think of a reason I would do such a thing. On the contrary, since I was outside patrolling, I'll obviously be a suspect." "Where is Mustafa?" Eric said.
Bill stared at Eric.
"I have no idea," he answered. "He was patrolling the perimeter, as he put it, earlier in the evening. I haven't seen him since Sookie came in here."
"I saw him in the kitchen," I said. "We talked." A presence caught my attention. "Brain at the front door," I said. Eric strode to the little used front door, and since I was in tow, I trotted along. Eric threw the door open, and the woman standing on the porch was left standing foolishly poised to knock. She looked up at Eric, and I could read her thoughts. To this woman, he was beautiful, disgusting, repellent, and oddly fascinating. She didn't like the beautiful and fascinating parts. She also didn't like being caught on the wrong foot.
"Mr. Northman," she said, her hand dropping to her side like a stone. "I'm Detective Kara Ambroselli."
"Detective Ambroselli, you seem to know who I am already. This is my dearest one, Sookie Stackhouse."
"Is there really a dead person on the lawn?" I asked. "Who is she?" I didn't have to make up the curiosity and anxiety in my voice. I really, really wanted to know.
"We were hoping you could help us with that," the detective said. "We're pretty sure the dead woman was leaving your house, Mr. Northman."
"Why do you think so? You're sure it was this house?"
Eric said. "Vampire bites on her neck, party clothes, your front yard. Yeah, we're pretty sure," Ambroselli said dryly. "If you could just step over here, keeping your feet on the stepping stones."
The stones, set at regular intervals in the grass, curved around to the driveway. The dark green and deep pink of the crepe myrtles coordinated with the pink and green of the dress worn by the dead woman. She was lying at their base, a little inclined to her left side, in a position disturbingly similar to the way she'd lain across Eric's lap when I'd first seen her. Her dark hair had fallen across her neck.
"That's the woman no one knew," I said. "At least, I think so. I only saw her for a minute. She didn't tell me her name."
"What was she doing when you saw her?"
"She was donating some blood to my boyfriend here," I said.
"Donating blood?"
"Yeah, she told us she'd done it before and she was happy to give," I said, my voice calm and matter-of-fact. "She definitely volunteered."
There was a moment of silence.
"You're kidding me," Kara Ambroselli said, but not as if she were at all amused. "You just stood there and let your boyfriend suck the neck of another woman while you did what?"
"It's about food, not about sex," I said, more or less lying. It was about food, but quite often it was also definitely about sex.
"Pam and I talked about girl stuff."
I smiled at Pam. I was aiming for winsome. Pam gave me a very level look in reply. I could imagine her looking at dead kittens that way. She said,
"I love the color of Sookie's toenails. We talked about pedicures."
So you two talked about your toenails while Mr. Northman fed off this woman in the same room. Cozy. And then what, Mr. Northman? After you had your little snack, you just gave her some money and sent her on her way? Did you get Mr. Compton to escort her to her car?
Money? Eric asked. Detective, are you calling this poor woman a whore?
Of course I didn't give her any money. She arrived, she volunteered, she said she had to go, and she left.
So what did she get out of your little transaction?
Excuse me, detective, I can answer that,
I said. When you're given blood, it's really very pleasurable, usually.
Of course, that was at the will of the vamp doing the biting. I shot a quick glance at Eric. He'd bitten me before without bothering to make it fun, and it had hurt like hell.
Then why weren't you the donor, Miss Stackhouse? Why did you let the dead girl have all the fun of feeding him?
Jeez, persistent.
I can't give blood as often as Eric needs it, I said.
I stopped there. I was in danger of over-explaining. Ambroselli's neck whipped around as she sprung the next question on Eric.
But you could survive just fine on a synthetic blood drink, Mr. Northman. Why'd you bite the girl?
It tastes better,
Eric said, and one of the uniforms spit on the ground.
Did you decide you'd like a taste, Mr. Compton, seeing as how she'd already been tapped?
Belle looked mildly disgusted.
No, ma'am. That wouldn't have been safe for the young lady.
As it turns out, she wasn't safe anyway, and none of you knows her name or how she got here. Why she came to this house? You didn't call some kind of I-need-a-drink hotline, like a vampire escort service? We all shook our heads simultaneously, saying no to all these questions at once.
I thought she came with my other guests, the ones from out of town, Eric said. They brought some new friends they met at a bar.
These guests are inside?
Yes,
Eric said, and I thought, oh gosh, I hope Felipe got them out of the bedroom. But of course, the police would have to talk to them.
Then let's take this inside and meet these guests, Detective Ambroselli said. Do you have any objection to us coming inside, Mr. Northman?
Not the least in the world, Eric said courteously.
So I traipsed back into the house with Bill, Eric, and Pam. The detective led the way as if the house were hers. Eric permitted it. By now, the Las Vegas contingent would have cleaned up, I hoped, since they'd certainly heard what Ambroselli had said when Eric went to the door. To my relief, the living room looked much more orderly. There were a few bottles of synthetic blood, but they were all positioned adjacent to a seated vampire. The big windows in the back were open, and the air quality was much better. Even the ashtray was out of sight, and someone had positioned a large bowl over the worst gouge marks on the coffee table. All the vamps and the humans, fully clothed, had assembled in the living room. They wore serious expressions. Mustafa was not among them. Where was he? Had he simply decided he didn't want to talk to the police, so he'd departed? Or had someone entered through the French windows and the kitchen doors and done something terrible to the Blade wannabe? Maybe Mustafa had heard something suspicious outside and had gone to investigate. Maybe the killer or killers had jumped him once he got outside, and that was why no one had heard anything. But Mustafa was so tough that I simply couldn't imagine anyone ambushing him and getting away with it. Though Mustafa might not fear anything, in actuality he was the former Keyshawn Johnson, and he was an ex-con. I didn't know why he'd been incarcerated, but I knew it was for something he'd been ashamed of. That was why he'd adopted a new name and a new profession after he'd served his term. The police wouldn't know him as Mustafa Khan, but they'd know he was Keyshawn Johnson as soon as they took his fingerprints, and he was scared of prison. Oh, how I wished I could communicate all this to Eric. I didn't believe Mustafa had killed the woman on the lawn. On the other hand, I'd never been completely inside his head since he was aware, but I'd never heard senseless aggression or random violence either. Rather, Mustafa's top priority had always registered as control. I believe most of us are capable of moments of rage, moments when our button's been pressed to the point where we lash out to stop the pressure. But I was sure that Mustafa was used to much worse treatment than anything that girl could have handed out. While I was worrying about Mustafa, Eric was introducing the remaining newcomers to Detective Ambroselli.
Felipe de Castro, he said, and Felipe nodded regally. His assistant, Horst Friedman.
To my surprise, Horst rose and shook her hand,
Not a vampire thing, hand shaking. Eric continued,
This is Felipe's consort, Angie Weatherspoon.
She was the third Nevada vampire, the redhead.
Pleased to meet you,
Angie said, nodding. The last time I'd seen her, Angie Weatherspoon had been dancing on the low table, enjoying Felipe's regard. Now the redhead was wearing a gray pencil skirt, a sleeveless green button-up blouse with tiny ruffles on the deep V-neckline, and 3-inch heels. Her legs went on forever. She looked great. When Eric turned to the humans for their introductions, he paused. Eric clearly didn't know the hugely muscular man's name, but before the moment could become awkward, the man extended a bulging arm and shook the detective's hand very delicately.
I'm Thad Rexford, he said, and Ambroselli's mouth dropped open.
The uniform who'd come in behind her said,
Oh, wow, T-Rex,
with sheer delight.
Wow,
Ambroselli echoed, forgetting her stern expression. All the vampires looked blank, but another human present, a plump and perky 20-year-old with a light brown mane of hair of which Kennedy Keyes would have approved, looked proud, as if being at the same party with him raised her status.
I'm Cherie Dodson,
she said in a voice that was surprisingly babyish.
This is my friend Vivica Bates. What's going on out front, guys?
Cherie was the woman who'd been making out with T-Rex. Vivica, just as curvaceous but with slightly darker hair, had been the one giving Felipe the donation. Detective Ambroselli quickly recovered from the surprise of meeting a famous wrestler at a vampire's house, and she was twice as pugnacious since she'd shown a moment of starstruck awe. There's a dead woman outside, Miss Dodson. That's what's going on. You all need to stay here to be ready for questioning. First off, did you ladies bring a third woman here with you? The detective was clearly talking to the humans. That is, all the humans except me.
These two lovely ladies were with me at the casino,
T-Rex said. Which one? Ambroselli was all about the details.
The trifecta? We met Felipe and Horst at the bar there, struck up a conversation over drinks. Felipe here kindly invited us to Mr. Northman's beautiful home.
The wrestler seemed completely at ease.
We was just out on the town, having some fun. We didn't bring nobody else with us.
Cherie and Vivica shook their heads.
Just us, Vivica said, and gave Horst a coy, sideways look.
The victim came into the house, Mr. Northman says, but he doesn't seem to know who she was.
Cara Ambroselli's flat tone made it clear what she thought of men who took blood from women they'd never met, while at the same time casting doubt on Eric's assertion that he hadn't known her. That was a lot to convey in one sentence, but she managed. I was standing right behind her, and I was getting a good reading on her. Cara Ambroselli was both ambitious and tough, necessary attributes to get ahead in the law enforcement world, especially for a woman. She'd been a patrol officer, distinguished herself by her courage in rescuing a woman from a burning house, sustained a broken arm in the course of subduing a robbery suspect, kept her head low and her social life secret. Now that she was a detective, she wanted to shine. She was simply packed full of information. I kind of admired her. I hoped we wouldn't be enemies. Cherie Dodson said,
Tell me she doesn't have on a green and pink dress?
All the flirty fun had drained from her voice.
That's what she's wearing, the detective said. Do you know her?
I met her this evening, Cherie said. Her name's Kim. Kim with a Y, she said. Her last name was Roe, I think. T-Rex, you remember her?
He looked down as though he were working hard at recovering the recollection, his dyed platinum hair showing a quarter inch of dark root. T-Rex's cheeks sported reddish-brown bristles, and his tight black T-shirt revealed that he'd shaved his chest. I thought that he had some ambivalence about his hair growth, but I was kind of fascinated by his musculature, I have to admit. He just bulged muscles everywhere, even in his neck. I glanced up to find Eric giving me a frosty look. Well, big whoop, considering.
I had quite a bit to drink tonight, Ms. Ambroselli,
the wrestler said, with a charming ruefulness.
But I remember the name, so I must have met her. Cherie, honey, was she at the bar?
No, baby, here. While we were dancing, she walked through the living room. She asked where Mr. Northman was.
How did this Kim arrive here? Ambroselli asked. She looked at me first. I don't know why.
I shrugged.
She was already here when I came in this evening, I said.
Where was she?
She was giving Eric blood back in the first room on the left past the bathroom.
And you invited her? Ambroselli asked Eric. To my house? No, as I said, I'd never met her, that I can recall. I'm sure you know I own Fangtasia, and many people come in and out of the bar, of course. I had gone to Sookie's room because I wanted to have a private word with her before we entertained our guests. This woman, this Kim, came back to the room. She said that Felipe had sent her to me as a present.
The detective didn't even ask Felipe. She just switched her dark gaze to him. The king spread his hands charmingly.
She seemed at loose ends, he said with a smile. She asked me if I knew Eric. I told her where Eric might be found. I suggested she go back to Eric and ask him if he wanted a drink. I thought he might be lonely without Sookie.
Did you see the dead girl arrive? Do you know how she got here or why she came? Ambroselli asked Pam.
Our other guests entered through the front door, properly. I suppose this Kim entered through the kitchen, Pam said, shrugging elegantly. Eric sent me on an errand, and I didn't see her arrive.
No, I didn't, Eric said. What errand?
Mustafa told me you wanted me to go buy some more rum, Pam said. Was this not the case?
Eric shook his head. I wouldn't send you on an errand if Mustafa was here at the house, he said. You're better protection any day.
I'll check from now on, Pam promised. Her voice was cold. I assumed the order came from you, and of course I set off for the store. When I got back, I checked the living room to make sure all was well, and I heard Sookie enter. Since I knew you were anxious to see her, and I knew you were in the bedroom, I took her back there.
I was in a group of multi-projectors. Ambroselli's brain was the busiest, naturally. T-Rex was thinking he was glad his publicist was on speed dial and wondering whether or not this incident would help his image. Vivica and Cherie were terribly excited. They didn't have the imagination to be relieved that the body on the lawn wasn't one of them. My own head was whirling with the excitement pouring from so many heads.
Mr. Compton, same questions for you, Ambroselli said. Did you see the victim arrive?
I did not, Bill said very positively. I should have. I was in charge of watching the front of the house, but I didn't see her get out of a car or approach by foot. She must have come through the back gate and up the hill to creep around the corner of the house and enter through the garage, or perhaps she came in through the French windows that open onto the kitchen and the living room, though I'm sure some of our guests would have noticed if she'd entered there.
There was a round of headshakes. No one had seen her come in that way.
And you didn't know her? Had never seen her? Ambroselli said to Pam.
As Eric pointed out, she may have been to Fangtasia. I don't remember meeting her or seeing her there.
Are there security cameras in Fangtasia?
There was a moment of silence.
We don't permit any sort of camera in Fangtasia while the club is open, Eric said smoothly. If patrons want pictures, there is a club photographer who is happy to take snapshots.
So let me see if I've got this right, Ambroselli said. This house belongs to you, Mr. Northman. She pointed from the floor to Eric. And you're the proprietor of Fangtasia. Ms. Ravenscroft works there with you as the club manager. Ms. Ravenscroft does not live here in this house. Ms. Stackhouse, from Bon Ton, is your girlfriend. She doesn't live here either. Mr. Compton, who sometimes works for you, also lives in Bon Ton.
Eric nodded. Exactly so, detective.
Bill looked approving. Pam looked bored.
If you all would go sit over at the dining table, and the cop's eyes expressed sardonic pleasure that a vampire had a dining table, I'll talk to these nice people.
She smiled unpleasantly at the visiting vamps. Pam, Eric, Bill, and I went to sit at the table. The darkness pressing at the windows loomed at my back in a very nerve-wracking fashion.
Mr. DeCastro, Mr. Friedman, Ms. Witherspoon, Ambroselli said,
you're all three visiting from Vegas, is that right? The three vampires wearing identical approving smiles nodded in chorus.
Mr. DeCastro, you have a business in Las Vegas. Mr. Friedman is your assistant, and Ms. Witherspoon is your girlfriend.
Her eyes went from Eric, Pam, and me to the Las Vegas trio, drawing a definite parallel.
Right, Felipe said, as if he were encouraging a backward child.
Ambroselli gave him a look that told Felipe he was permanently on her shit list. She turned to the next trio.
So,
Mr. Rexford, Ms. Dodson, Ms. Bates. Tell me again how you came to be here. You met up with Mr. DeCastro and his party in the bar of the Trifecta?
I've been dating T-Rex here for a while, Cherie said.
The massive wrestler put an arm around her.
And Vivica is my best buddy. We three were having a drink, and we met up with Felipe and his friends in the bar. We got to talking.
She smiled to show off her dimples.
Felipe said they were coming over to visit Eric here, and they invited us to come along.
But the dead woman wasn't with you at the bar at the casino.
No, said T-Rex, now grave. We never seen her at the Trifecta or anywhere else before we came in this house.
Was anyone else inside when they got here? Detective Ambroselli asked Eric directly.
Yes, Eric said. My daytime man, Mustafa Khan.
I fidgeted at his side, and he cast me a quick glance. Ambroselli blinked.
What's a daytime man?
It's sort of like having another assistant, I said, leaping into the conversation. Mustafa does the things that Eric can't, things that require going out in the daylight. He goes to the post office, he picks up stuff from the printer, he goes to the dry cleaner, he gets supplies for this house, he gets the car serviced and inspected.
Do all vampires have a daytime man? The lucky ones,
Eric said with his most charming smile.
Mr. DeCastro, do you have a daytime man? Ambroselli asked him. I do, and I hope he is hard at work in Nevada, Felipe said, radiating bonhomie.
What about you, Mr. Compton?
I've been fortunate enough to have a kind neighbor who will help me out with daytime errands, Bill said.
That would be me.
I'm hiring someone so I won't tax her goodwill.
The detective turned to the patrol officer behind her and issued some commands that the vampires could surely hear, but I could not. However, I could read her mind, and I knew that she was telling the officer to also search for a man named Mustafa Khan, who seemed to be missing, and that the victim's name was probably Kim Rowe, and he should check the missing persons list to see if she was on it. A plainclothes guy, another detective, I guessed, came in and took Ambroselli out on the front porch. While he whispered in her ear, I was sure all the vampires were trying hard to hear what he was telling her, but I could hear it in her brain. Pam touched my arm, and I turned to face her. She raised her eyebrows in a question. I nodded. I knew what they were talking about.
I need to talk to all of you separately, Ambroselli said, turning back to us. The crime scene team needs to go through the house, so if you could come down to headquarters with me?
Eric looked angry.
I don't want people going through my house. Why would they? He asked. The woman died outside. I didn't even know her.
Well, you took her blood quick enough, Ambroselli said. Valid point, I thought, tempted to smile for just a nanosecond.
We won't know where she died until we look at your house, sir, Ambroselli continued. For all I know, you're all covering up a crime that took place inside this very room.
I had to repress an impulse to glance around in a guilty way.
Eric, Sookie, and I were together from the time this Roe woman left the bedroom until we came out here to talk to Felipe and his friends, Pam said.
And we were all together until Eric and Pam and Sookie came out here from the bedroom, Horst said promptly,
which was simply not true. Any of the Nevada vampires or their human pickups could have slipped outside and disposed of Kim. At least Pam was telling the truth. Then I remembered that I'd been shut in the bathroom, by myself, for at least 10 minutes. I'd assumed that Pam had remained outside the bathroom door. I'd assumed Eric had gone into the living room to tell Felipe and his crowd that it was time to get down to business. He would have suggested that the human guests go into the other bedroom while we had our discussion. That's what I'd assumed. But I had no way to know for sure.
Chapter 4 Down at the police station, we covered the same conversational ground, but this time on an individual basis. It was both boring and tense. When I'm dealing with the police, I'm always thinking what I could be guilty of. I always imagine there are laws I don't know about, laws that I've broken. And, of course, I've broken a few major laws that haunt me, some more than others. After the individual interviews, conducted by several policemen, we were deposited back in our little groups and stowed separately around the big room. The Nevada vampires were finishing up talking to a detective several yards away, while I could see Cherie in a glass-walled cubicle with yet another interviewer. T-Rex and Vivica waited for her on a bench against the wall.
I was more than ready to leave this building. This late at night, even on a Saturday, the traffic on Texas Boulevard would be light. If I had my car, I could be home in an hour, maybe less.
Unfortunately, the police had suggested we all pile into Felipe's Suburban for the trip to the station. Since my car had been parked at the curb, it was temporarily part of the crime scene. Simply for want of something else to do while she waited to hear from the crime scene people, Cara Ambroselli was walking us through the evening one more time.
Yes, and obviously bored, Eric was saying. My friend Bill Compton came in from Bon Temps. Since the other vampires who work for me were busy at the club, I asked Bill to help out at my house because I was having company, though I confess I wasn't expecting quite so much of it. Bill was tasked with patrolling the front grounds. Though I live in a gated community, from time to time curiosity seekers try to make my acquaintance, especially during a party. So Bill was doing a circuit of the front yard and the area around it every few minutes. Right, Bill?
Bill nodded agreeably. He and Eric were such buddies.
That's what I did, he said. I surprised one old man who came down to the end of his driveway to get his newspaper, and I saw one woman out walking her dog. I talked to Suki when she arrived.
It was my turn to do the smiling and nodding. We were all friends here.
And if I'd followed Bill's advice, I thought, I would never have seen Eric sucking on Kim Rowe's neck, and I would never have seen her dead body, and I would be sound asleep in bed.
I looked at Bill thoughtfully. He raised his brows at me.
What?
I shook my head, a tiny motion.
And you had asked this missing man, Mustafa, to help Mr. Compton keep intruders away, though his employment is as your daytime man.
Detective Ambroselli was talking to Eric.
I think we've already covered that. Where do you think Mr. Khan is?
Last time I saw him, he was in the kitchen, I said, figuring it was my turn. As I told you, we spoke when I came inside.
What was he doing?
Nothing in particular. We didn't talk long. I was
in a hurry to see Eric, but he was busy with the dead woman.
I was anxious to apologize to our guests for being a bit late, I said. Mustafa had made me late on purpose, but what that purpose had been, I couldn't fathom.
And you came upon Mr. Northman in your bedroom, or at least the bedroom you customarily use, taking blood from another woman.
There was really nothing to say to that.
Didn't that make you really angry, Miss Stackhouse?
No, I said. I get anemic if he drinks from me too often.
At least that part was the truth. So you're not mad, even though he could get the same nourishment from a bottle?
She just wasn't going to stop. That was what you wanted in a cop, unless you had stuff to hide. I wasn't happy, I said simply, but I accepted it. Like death and taxes. Comes with the territory when you're dating a vampire.
I shrugged, trying to imitate nonchalance. You were unhappy, and now she's dead, Ambroselli said. She looked down at her notepad for dramatic effect. She thought we were all a bunch of lousy liars. According to Ms. Dodson, she heard Ms. Ravenscroft threaten the victim.
Eric turned a dark blue gaze on Cherie Dodson, clearly visible through the glass of the enclosure. At the same moment, her wrestler friend, T-Rex, was looking at Cherie almost as unhappily as Eric. Though I had to stretch a little, I could get the gist of his thoughts. T-Rex knew what his girlfriend was saying to the police. Cherie's disclosure didn't accord with T-Rex's code of ethics. Thad Rexford had a very interesting mind, and I would have liked to wander around in it a little longer, but Eric gripped my hand to give it what he thought was a gentle squeeze. I turned to look up at him with narrowed eyes. He could tell I was distracted, and he didn't think my mind should be wandering.
I advised the woman that she should leave town, yes, Pam said imperturbably. I don't think that was threatening her. If I'd wanted to threaten her, I'd have said, I'll rip your head from its neck.
Ambroselli took a deep breath.
Why did you tell her to leave town?
She had been insulting and insolent to Suki, who is my friend, and Eric, who is my boss.
What did she say that was so insulting?
Probably I should answer this one. It would sound haughty coming from Pam. Of course, Pam was haughty. She was pretty excited that Eric had taken blood from her. I shrugged. She seemed to think that made her special. She wasn't happy Eric told her to leave after I showed up.
I guess she'd assumed that Eric's taking blood from her meant he wanted to have sex with her, and she thought I would, you know, participate in that. This was hard to say, and it must have been unpleasant to hear from the face the detective made.
You didn't feel that way, too?
Honestly, it was the equivalent of being insulted by a pork chop my boyfriend was eating, I said, and then I was smart enough to shut my mouth. Eric smiled down at me. I would have given a lot to wipe that smile off his face. I took advantage of Amber Sally being distracted by her cell phone to smile back at Eric. He understood my expression well enough. His mouth straightened out. Over his shoulder, I could see that Bill looked unmistakably pleased.
So, Ms. Ravenscroft, you told Kim Rowe to go, she left, and she died, Amber Sally said, by way of resuming the questioning.
But she didn't seem focused on Pam the way she had been, and I could see that she was preparing to move out.
Yes, that's right, Pam said. She'd read Amber Sally's body language the same way I had, and she was eyeing the detective thoughtfully.
Please stay where you are. I have to return to Mr. Northman's place to check something out, Amber Sally said. She was on her feet, gathering up her shoulder bag. Givens, make sure everyone stays here until I say they can go. And just like that, she left. Givens, a man with a starved, concave face, looked very unhappy. He called a few more people in, all men, I noticed, and assigned one to each batch of us.
If they need to go to the restroom, send someone with them. Don't let them go alone,
he instructed the heavy guy in charge of our little group.
She's the only one who should need to go,
he added, pointing at me. Bored, I turned my chair around to watch the Nevada vamps for a while. Felipe, Horst, and Angie seemed to have had a lot of experience with the police. They sat together in silence, though a little downturn to one corner of Felipe's lips told me he was mighty displeased. As a king, he probably hadn't been treated like an ordinary vampire in a long time, not that humans knew who or what he was, but ordinarily Felipe would have several layers of insulation between him and the regular pitfalls of the vampire world. If I had to pick a word to describe the king of Arkansas, Nevada, and Louisiana, that word would be miffed. He could hardly blame Eric for this turn of events. He might, anyway. I switched my gaze to the human group in the glass-enclosed office. T-Rex was signing autographs for some of the uniforms. Cherie and Vivica were preening themselves, proud to be in such illustrious company. Under his air of just a good old boy, T-Rex was bored. He would have been glad to be somewhere else. When the little cluster of cops dispersed, he pulled out his cell phone and called his manager. I couldn't tell what they were talking about, but from his thoughts I could read that T-Rex couldn't think of anyone else to call in the middle of the night. He was tired of conversation with his female companions, especially Cherie, who could not keep her mouth shut. I spotted a familiar face among the cops going to and fro in the big room.
Hey, Detective Coughlin, I said, oddly happy to see someone I knew.
The middle-aged detective swung himself around, using his belly as a fixed point. His hair was shorter than ever and a bit grayer.
Miss Deckhouse, he said, coming over to us. You found any more bodies?
No, sir, I said, but a woman was found dead in the front yard of Eric's place, and I was in the house. I jerked my head toward Eric, in case Coughlin didn't know who he was. Pretty unlikely that a police officer in Shreveport wouldn't know the city's most prominent vampire, but it could happen.
So, who you going with now, young lady?
Coughlin didn't approve of me, but he didn't hate me either. Eric Northman, I said, and I realized I didn't sound at all happy about that.
Out with the furries and in with the coldies, huh?
Eric had been talking to Pam in a very low voice, but now he turned to stare at me. I guess so. The first time I'd seen Detective Coughlin, I'd been with Alcide Hervaux. The second time, I'd been with Quinn the Were-Tiger. They had been in their human forms then, and he hadn't known their second identity since the two-natured hadn't revealed their existence. By now, he'd figured it out. Mike Coughlin might be slow and unimpressive, but he wasn't stupid.
So, you're with the party that came in with T-Rex?
He asked. I wasn't used to the humans being more interesting than the vampires. I smiled. Yes, I met him tonight at Eric's.
You ever see him wrestle?
No, he's a big guy, huh?
Yeah, and he does a lot for the community, too. He takes toys to the kids in the hospital at Christmas and Easter.
So, though T-Rex was not a were-animal, he was two-faced. One side of him did community service and helped area charities raise money.
The other side of him hit opponents upside the head with chairs and made out with women on other people's dining room tables.
Mike Coughlin said, "If they rope me in to help question, I'll ask for you."
"Thanks," I said, wondering if that was really anything to smile about. "But I hope I'm through with questions." He went off to have a closer look at Thad Rexford. Pam, Eric, Bill, and I sat together without exchanging a word. Vampires are super at silence. They just go into motionless vampire mode. You would swear they were statues, they get so still. I don't know what they think about when they do this. Maybe they don't think at all, but just switch themselves off. It's almost impossible for a human to do this. I guess deep meditation would be the closest state a breather could achieve, and I'm no practitioner of meditation, deep or shallow. After a while, during which nothing much happened at all, Detective Coughlin came over to tell us we could go. He gave no explanation. Eric didn't request one. I had been on the point of asking if I could curl up under someone's desk. I was too tired to summon the energy to be resentful at our treatment. Pam whipped out her cell phone to call Fantasia so someone would pick us up. Dawn wasn't far away. Felipe and his party wanted to go directly to their vampire-safe rooms at the Trifecta, and the Shreveport vamps didn't want to wait on a human cab. While we were standing outside waiting on our ride, the three vampires turned to me.
"What was it the man on the telephone was telling Cara Ambroselli?" Pam asked. "What did they find?"
"They found a little glass vial, like florists stick individual flowers in?" The vampires looked puzzled. I measured one off with my fingers. "Just big enough for one flower stem to soak in water," I said. "The vial may have had a stopper on it, but they didn't find that. The vial was on the ground underneath her. They think it had been tucked in her bra. It had traces of blood."
They all considered that.
"I'll bet you a demon's dick that she had a bit of fairy blood in it," Pam said. "She came into the house somehow, and when she got close to Eric, she uncorked the little vial and made herself irresistible."
"Except he could have resisted," I muttered, but they all ignored me.
"And if that's what happened, where's the stopper?" We were all too tired to talk about this interesting development any further. At least I was, and the other three didn't. In 5 minutes, Palomino showed up in a candy apple red Mustang. She was wearing the uniform the female waitstaff wore at the Trifecta, and there wasn't much to it. I was too sleepy to ask her when she'd begun working at the casino. I climbed into the back seat with Bill, while Pam sat in Eric's lap in the passenger front seat. We didn't even discuss the seating. Eric broke the silence by asking Palomino if anyone had heard from Mustafa. The young vamp glanced over at him. Her hair was like corn silk, and her skin was like milky caramel. The unusual combination had earned her the nickname, and that was the only thing I knew to call her. I had no idea what had been written on her birth certificate.
"No, Master. No one has seen or heard from Mustafa."
Bill silently took my hand. I silently led him. In the heat, his hand felt pleasantly cool.
"Everything all right at the club?" Eric said. "At least as far as you know."
"Yes, Master. I heard there was one disagreement, but Thalia settled it."
"How big was the bill for this settling?"
"A broken arm, a broken leg."
Thalia was ancient, incredibly strong, and notoriously short on patience.
"No furniture?"
"Not this time."
"Indira and Maxwell Lee kept an eye on things?"
"Maxwell Lee says so," Palomino said cautiously.
Eric laughed, not a big laugh, but something in the chuckle range.
"Damned with faint praise," he said.
Indira and Maxwell, who lived and worked in Eric's sheriffdom, Area 5, were required to put in so many hours a month at the bar so Fantasia could boast that every night there were real vampires in the club. That was the big draw for the tourists. While Indira and Maxwell, and most of the other Area 5 vamps, were dutiful about their bar appearances, they were not enthusiastic. Palomino and Eric might have solved the mysteries of the universe during the rest of their conversation, but I didn't hear their conclusions. I fell asleep. When we arrived at Eric's, Bill had to help me scramble out of the back seat. Palomino pulled away the instant Bill slammed the door. Pam quickly got into her own car for the short drive to her house, casting an anxious glance at the sky as she backed out of the driveway. If a crime scene team had been at the house, its job was finished.
We had to enter through the garage door, since there was tape around the place where Kim had lain. I trudged into the house, so groggy I was only partly aware of what was going on around me. Bill didn't have time to get back to Bon Temps, so he was going to take one of the fiberglass guest pods that Eric kept in the second upstairs bedroom. He headed toward the back of the house immediately, leaving Eric and me by ourselves. I looked around me in a dazed way. The kitchen had an array of dirty bottles and glasses by the sink, but I noticed that the garbage bag was gone. The police must have taken it. I told Eric, "Mustafa had that door open when I came in," and I pointed to the door onto the backyard patio. Without a word, Eric went over to the door. It was unlocked. He took care of that while I started across the living room. It wasn't too disordered, since Felipe, Horst, and Angie had neatened it, but still its disheveled state disturbed me. I began straightening chairs and gathering up the few remaining bottles and glasses to take to the kitchen.
"Leave it be, Sookie," Eric said.
I froze. "I know this isn't my house," I said, "but this mess just looks so nasty. I'd hate to get up to face this."
"The issue is not ownership of the house. The issue is that you are exhausted, and yet you feel compelled to do the maid's job. I hope you're spending the rest of the night. I would feel uneasy if you drove back, as tired as you must be."
"I guess I'll stay," I said, though I was still far from satisfied with the way things stood between us. If I'd been strong enough, I would have left, but it would be very foolish to start driving home and risk having a wreck. Eric was suddenly right in front of me, and he put his arms around me. I started to pull away.
"Sookie," he said, "let's make this right. I have enemies on every side, and I don't want to have one here at home."
I made myself hold still. I reviewed everything I'd told myself while I'd been taking my time out in the bathroom. That seemed to have been a week ago instead of hours.
"Okay," I said slowly. "Okay. I know that I should be totally all right with what you did with that woman. I know if people are willing, there's no reason you shouldn't take a sip from them, especially since she was actually booby-trapped. I think you could have held out if you'd really wanted to. I know my reaction is emotional, not logical, but it's the reaction I'm having. I also know, in my head, that I love you. I'm just not feeling it at this moment. Oh, by the way, I have something to confess to you, too, regarding another man."
Ha, that sharpened him up. Eric's eyebrows flew up, and he stepped back a little, looking down at me and very nearly scowling.
"What?"
he said, biting the word out as if it tasted bad. I felt more cheerful.
"Remember I told you I was going to Hooligans to see Claude strip?" I said. "There were other guys, too, mostly Faye, who did, well, almost the full Monty."
I raised one eyebrow and tried to look inscrutable. Eric's mouth quirked in what was very nearly a smile.
"Claude is a beautiful man. How do I stack up against the fairy?" he asked.
The fairy was stacked all right," I said, looking off in another direction ostentatiously.
Eric squeezed me.
"Sookie?"
"Eric!"